Last week we began this new series by once again following our little friend, the donkey. And we followed the donkey into the knowing donkey, learning how to know the heart of God. Today we're going to continue that journey because truly knowing God's heart always leads to showing God's heart. And few things reveal God's heart more clearly than one word: forgiveness. Yeah, this is a deep breath kind of sermon. We're going to be in a familiar story. We're going to be with Joseph. We're going to be in Genesis chapter 42. So let me encourage you, grab a copy of the Bible, whether it be on your phone, whether it be one you brought with you, whether it be one that you pull out of the rack in front of you, but grab your copy of the Bible, and you can begin getting to Genesis chapter 42. I will join you in a moment, because I want us to remember how we got here. Because every road of forgiveness begins with an idea of brokenness. Joseph's brothers betrayed him, threw him into a pit, and sold him into slavery. After he got there, his time in Egypt led him to be falsely accused and forgotten in prison, wasting years, not days, not months, not weeks, wasting years of his life. But you know what? God was with him. And well, God worked things through it, and now he is second command in the nation and kingdom of Egypt. And well, as things happen, now there is a famine that strikes not only Egypt, but all of the land around Egypt. Deep breath. And the same brothers who wounded him are now coming to him for help. And that's what brings us to Genesis chapter 42. It's the moment Joseph's past walks back through the door. And in this reunion, God begins to reveal that forgiveness doesn't happen in a moment. It unfolds through a process that moves through pain, testing, grace, and brokenness. And that's the journey we're going to take today. We are going to start with that very moment. I am going to be in Genesis chapter 42, verse 8, and we're going to start in that very moment that Joseph is forced. He didn't choose it. He is forced to face the pain. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but they did not recognize him. So I want you to imagine the flood of memories that had to come into Joseph's mind at that moment and at that point in time. He had to begin thinking about the pit, the betrayal, the unheard cries, being treated like property, sold into slavery by his own family. Add in the suffering he endured in Egypt, separated from his family. And now it's all epitomized in 10 little faces standing right there in front of him, holding out their hand, asking for help. That's a deep breath moment, isn't it, folks? That's some serious pondering that's got to happen, because Joseph's first reaction wasn't peace. It was absolute pain. He didn't go to them and hug them and say, "Good to see you. How are things going? How's Dad?" You realize he was not even there for Mom's funeral. He's not there for any of this. He loses. Well, actually, he was there for Mom's funeral, but he wasn't there for all of the life that happened going through there. So you understand. Joseph doesn't have anything. He's just looking at these faces who are asking for help. And honestly, all he can feel his pain. You ever been there? I have. I understand this. I get this. I've been on both sides of the equation. But here's what we need to take out of this. You can't forgive what you refuse to face. God can't heal what you refuse to hide. Forgiveness is like cleaning a wound. If you never uncover it, infection sets in. And the sad thing is, the longer it stays set in, the more it spreads. Healing begins when you stop hiding the hurt and you bring it to the surface. And there's an important part that we need to understand about this. Folks, forgiveness is going to hurt. If you have forgiveness that caused you no pain, then you probably have never experienced forgiveness. But here's the good news. God doesn't just help us face the pain. He refines our heart through moments of testing. I've now dropped down to verses 19 through 20, and this is what it says. If you were honest men, so this is now Joseph talking with his brothers, and remember, he gets who they are. They have no idea who Joseph is. If you are honest men, let one of you stay here in prison, not the palace. He's not offering a slumber party. Okay? You guys are going to go back, and your brother is going to stay in prison while the rest of you go and take grain back to your starving households. But you must bring your youngest brother to me so that your words may be verified, that you may not die. This they proceeded to do. When one looks at these verses, they honestly can seem a little confusing and very contradictory to this idea of forgiveness. Joseph doesn't reveal himself right away. Does that mean he's being deceptive? Joseph accuses them of being spies. Is he manipulating them? He places all of them in custody for 3 days before these verses appear on the scene. Is Joseph being vindictive? Is this his way of getting even for all of the years that he spent in prison? Seriously, do you think 3 days would have been enough for him to be vindicated? Not really. But the answer to those questions is, this is none of above. He is setting the stage for a test, one that is done out of revelation, not out of just being vengeful. You see, when we begin to look at this, Joseph's next actions help us understand what testing really is, because biblical testing always has two sides. And what Joseph accomplishes in testing teaches us something we often forget when it comes to our idea of what forgiveness really is. So let's take a look at the two sides of this test. And on one side, this is what he does. He offers to release 10 of them so they may tend to their family's need. Joseph shows them compassion. He doesn't turn them away and starve them. He doesn't humiliate them. He doesn't make them earn their mercy. He meets their needs before their character is ever proven. And this is a huge moment for us, folks. Because think about who he's looking at. They're still suspects. They're still unrepentant. When Joseph asked them about their past, they confidently say, oh yeah, there were 12 of us, but now there are only 11 because one died. Let that roll through your mind what Joseph must have been feeling when those words rolled off their brother's tongue to say, yeah, there are only 10 of us, I mean, there are only 11 of us now, and one of them's back home and because one of our brothers is dead. Yet, they still get fed? Really? That's compassion, folks. Compassion responds to the need, not merit. If you have to earn compassion, then you're not really getting compassion. You're getting something else. Because compassion is where the heart begins to break. But don't just think, okay, that's it. I'm just supposed to be nice and let everything roll off my back like a duck. Nope. Because then comes the other side of forgiveness. This is the side we don't like. This is the side where he takes his brother, his own brother, and we're not talking about 3 days. This guy is going back to jail until the brothers come back with the youngest brother. So he's going to go to prison to pay for the sins of all of his other brothers until they come back in repentance. And we have a word for that in our society. And it's a word that we don't like. That word is accountability. Now, I know when we start talking about forgiveness, some of us were taught forgiveness means pretending that it didn't hurt. That's me. Tough it out, wipe it off, rub a little dirt on it, keep on moving because you know what? It really didn't hurt you that bad. You can work through it. Others of us were taught that boundaries mean bitterness. It means that when I come and ask you for forgiveness, I got to let all the boundaries down and I got to open my arms up and say whatever you want. You do understand. Joseph shows us a better way because for his brothers to do what he's asking them. Think about what it's going to mean. It means they're going to have to come face to face with their own sin. It means that they're going to have to go to their father and confess what they did. And it means they're going to have to place their faith in a man that they actually don't think they know, but knows them very well. That process sounds vaguely familiar, doesn't it? That process of facing my own sin, that process of confessing my sins to the Father, that process of putting my faith in a man that knows me better than I know him. Yeah, that's how forgiveness works. But forgiving someone doesn't mean reentering an unsafe relationship. Grace absolutely, positively can coexist with distance. Love can say, I forgive you, and at the same time, you don't get the same access yet. That doesn't make you unforgiving. That just means that we learned some lessons that Joseph wanted us to learn. Forgiveness is not reckless. Forgiveness is not jumping back in front of the moving car. Okay, that's not forgiveness. Grace is not blind. Rich mentioned this. You don't have the ability to forget what has been done to you. It is not a design flaw. God built us that way, where we do not have the ability to forget the past. Okay, some of us do as we're getting older. But really? Aren't those the memories you hold on to the longest? Those ones that get all the way down to the deep part of your soul? Those hurts, those wounds? Aren't those the things that you tend to never be able to forget? You see, we take this out of forgiveness because we think it makes forgiveness easier, but it actually makes it harder. Accountability is not unloving. Looking at somebody that has hurt you deeply and saying, you know what, that hurt, and it's going to take a little time to get over that hurt. It doesn't mean I don't forgive you, but you understand, this is not that kind of a moment. You see, sometimes God does some weird things. Because compassion without testing, well, it's kind of enabling, isn't it? If all I have to do is say I'm sorry. Anybody here have, if you have kids, did you raise your kids, did you ever made them say they were sorry to their brothers or sisters? Were they really sorry? Nope. Saying I'm sorry is not forgiveness. If all you want to do is apologize, then you're looking for forgiveness without accountability. You want to be enabled. But don't mess it up the other way. Accountability without blessing is hard. It just keeps you in that same place. Because testing, well, it's an important moment. Testing is that moment when we get to see what time alone cannot heal. Proverbs chapter 17, verse 3 says, "The crucible for silver and the furnace, the crucible for silver and the furnace for gold, but the Lord tests the heart." So sometimes this testing is because God is testing the person that has offended you. Sometimes that testing is because God is testing your heart to see if you're ready. Because it's got to work together. Sometimes, I hate this, God opens old wounds to show us what truly healed and what still being held. That's God. Forgiveness isn't pretending that it never hurt and that it never happened. It's letting God prove what the heart he's restored or the one that we have failed to lend him. It's in testing we learn whether our forgiveness is genuine or we just said, I'm sorry because I don't want to get sent to my room. I just said, I'm sorry because you know what? I feel guilty about what I do and I'm tired of feeling guilty, so I'm just going to apologize and that makes it all better. That's not God's model for this word that we use, forgiveness. You see, once testing reveals the heart, then God invites us to make a choice. We can keep holding, or we can start releasing. I'm still in Genesis chapter 42, and I've dropped all the way down to verses 24 through 25, if you're following along. He, now this is Joseph, so catch you up on the story. They went down, they came back, they went down. They didn't immediately come back. They ran away till they ran out of grain. You know, so they went down to feed their families, and they ate their family. Their brother's still up in prison. And they feed their family, and eventually the famine doesn't let up, and they're all out of grain again. And Dad said, well, boys, why don't you go on back to Egypt and buy us some more grain? Uh-oh. That means I got to ask Dad for youngest brother Benjamin. Dad, maybe there's something we should let you know before we head back there. That guy that was up in Egypt, he wasn't real happy to see us, and he sold us the grain. But before we can come back, we got to bring something with us. Okay, sons, what do you need to bring? We've got to bring Benjamin. Wait a minute, boys. The last time I let you guys take my youngest son with you, he ended up not coming back. You see what's happening, right? But Jacob relents. They got to have food, right? So we're back, and well, now let's take a look at verses 24 through 25. He turned away from them and began to weep, but then came back and spoke to them again. He had Simeon taken away, and I'm sorry, I've jumped ahead in the story. This is before they even leave to go back. He had Simeon taken away from them and bound before their eyes. Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain, to put each man's silver back in his sack, and to give them past provisions. See, Patty, you're not the only one that loses your place. I did the exact same thing here. This is that moment. Now he's sending them back home. So let's take a quick look at this. We'll get to the other part of the story in a moment. Joseph wept. Because remember, forgiveness is never cold or easy. However, grace began to leak out of him even before reconciliation. And the place where they stopped before the night, one of them opened their sack to get their feed for his donkey. And he said he saw his silver in the mouth of his sack. We are reminded that the brothers left Egypt on donkeys carrying grain they had not paid for. and silver they did not have been returned to them. That's what Joseph did in the test. The donkey bore the weight of forgiveness they had yet to accept and did not even know was available. Because that's how grace often travels. It shows up on the journey before the heart ever catches up. Forgiveness always gets more than it's asked for. Would Joseph have been justified in giving him the grain and keeping the money? That was the deal. But he was making something, a bigger statement here. It doesn't calculate fairness, it extends mercy. Sometimes forgiveness begins with nothing more than a simple act of kindness, a prayer for the one who hurt you, a blessing for the one who wronged you. It's sort of like releasing a clenched fist. You don't realize how tense you were until you actually let it go. And when you act in grace, your heart begins to follow. Because grace doesn't rush. It waits to see what happens, what God will do with a broken heart. Even in grace, Joseph continues to hold Simeon. He's going to prison, reminding that forgiveness doesn't erase accountability. It begins to test whether there is true repentance. So now we're to where I skipped forward to. We're at years later, and the brothers have are now fearing the fact that Joseph might punish them. They came, they went, they brought back. Forgiveness was granted to them. We're now years and years and years have passed. And I'm sure Joseph thought everything is all good. But then it happens. Dad dies. So the brothers begin to think to themselves, what if? And we hear these words. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrong that we did? Wow. What if? What if Joseph was faking it all these years? And he asked us to bring Benjamin, and we did everything that he asked us to do, and he did all of that stuff, and he put on a really good show, and we thought it was all forgiveness, and we thought everybody... But now things have changed because he might have been doing that just because of Dad. So we find out something about forgiveness. Joseph's brothers have been living for years under the offer of forgiveness that they never accepted. You ever ridden that donkey before? You've been forgiven, but you just refuse to forgive yourself. And again, this is a model I understand, because here is what they actually thought. They thought under their model, forgiveness, you have to earn it. Verse 18. His brothers came to him and threw themselves down before him. We are your slaves. Okay, this fulfilled Joseph's dream. You know, the sheaves and the... But that wasn't the point of what you're seeing here. The reality is Joseph forgave them. They couldn't forgive themselves. They couldn't do it. They could not see a clear path how anybody could write off what they had done. That's not humanly possible, is it? That you can hurt somebody as much as they hurt Joseph, and they get off scot-free? But Joseph speaks one of the clearest pictures of grace in Scripture that we've ever saw. This is what he said, verse 20. I'm now in chapter 50. You intended to harm me, but God intended for good to accomplish what is now being done in saving many lives. Examine that a little bit closer. Joseph did not let them off the hook and say what happened was okay and everything is just in the past. Did it sound like Joseph forgot about the pit? Does it sound like Joseph forgot about the prison? Does it sound like Joseph forgot about the time that he was just left there? Does it sound like he forgot any of this? No. You know why? Not designed that way. Not only did he not forget, he didn't say, you know what, I'm good with it. It's okay. It happened and it's over. He also did not say, I've moved on. Because let's be honest, he could not. In fact, just the opposite comes out of that statement. He said that God worked things out. When he says that, he said God intended it for good. You do understand that word intended is the same word that he used for his brothers. He said, you had a plan, and that plan was to harm me. God had a plan, and that plan, well, was to help everybody else. He did not look at this and say, it was any of it was okay. He did not say, it's all good. But what he does reassure them is, well, forgiveness doesn't deny the wrong. It declares that God had a plan greater than man's failure. Folks, it's not an overnight process. Joseph could not forgive from the pit. He could not forgive from the prison. It had to be in the presence, first with God, and then with those that he had to forgive. And you know what? That's how forgiveness works. And that's exactly how God intended us, and you're all out of blanks. On purpose. I'm not out of sermon. I want you to give me your undivided attention, because this is not about filling in the blanks. Because I want you to understand something. Joseph could have been justified in accepting their offer. Could he not? We want to be your slaves. Joseph could have said, done. Boy, am I going to have a lot of fun over the next few years. But you do understand that would not have undone the past. The fairy tale family could not be recreated. The time lost, it couldn't be replaced. The missed memories, they can't go and re-celebrate those, right? And the coat was still torn, bloodstained, and gone. Nothing would be accomplished by just staying right there. Instead of reconciliation, it would have produced resentment. Think about that moment. Every single time his brother served him out of fear, it would never be because they actually loved him. Over time, that fear would have hardened into distance because repayment never leads to restoration. What are you going to get back? What are they going to offer him? What could they possibly do to fix any of this? All of Joseph's dreams had come true. But only through forgiveness could he keep them from becoming a nightmare. That's a moment of forgiveness. He had the dreams that all of this was going to happen, but if he did not choose at that moment forgiveness, his life was about to become a nightmare. Unforgiveness keeps on looking backwards in regret. Honestly, because nothing has broken yet. Matthew chapter 5, verses 23 through 24 says, therefore, if you have an offering and your gift at the altar, and then remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, and then come and offer your gift. You see, quite honestly, we keep the debt. We keep guarding the wound. We keep rehearsing the past. And notice I'm using the word we. This is not a I've got this all figured out. This is a we kind of moment. But forgiveness only begins when something finally is allowed to break. In the story, every step of forgiveness requires something to break. Joseph's silence broke before his tears fell. His control broke before grace flowed. His right to revenge broke before reconciliation was ever possible. For forgiveness to be needed, something must be acknowledged as broken. For forgiveness to be offered, somebody must be broken. And for forgiveness to be accepted, somebody else must be broken. That, my friends, is forgiveness broken together. Interesting fact, when you look at this story and we get all the way to the end, we never get the brother's answers. Verse 21 reads this way, chapter 50. So then don't be afraid, this is Joseph speaking, I will provide for you and your children. And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. So it doesn't sound like Joseph took them up on the slave offer. But after these words, the scene fades absolutely to black. And when the lights come back up and you're looking at the next scene, they are now standing at the bedside of Joseph, who's dying. And he dies. And the brothers are standing there. And I wonder what they're feeling. Are they breathing a sigh of relief? Or just a twinge of guilt? Just a moment like, okay, I made it to the end. I'm free. But I surely wish I had another chance to fix that. Which, with Easter now only a month of moment, sets up a very, very beautiful Jesus thought. When you come here on Easter, are you coming to the tomb to see a grave or find forgiveness? Why did you come to the tomb in the first place? Was it to see the grave and the spectacle? Or was it for forgiveness? So, for today, something to think about going home. Maybe your journey feels heavy, not because the path is hard, but because you're trying to hold together what God is asking you to surrender and let be broken. You're trying to keep the pieces cohesive in your life, and God's like, you're just going to have to let them break. Because forgiveness cannot be experienced unless brokenness begins to happen.